Well, at the end of the last week, if you recall, St. Francis gave us three kind of levels of some page 76.
76.
He gave us kind of three levels of participating in God's will. And the first, if you recall, was to love God's will and consolations. You know, he's always giving you a little kiss on the cheek, a little peck on the top of the head, and this kind of stuff, you know, saying, you know, good boy, good girl, do what this is good. But he said the important thing is to love the God who has given you the consolation, not just love the consolation. Okay? And then the next level is to love God's will in all of his commandments, counsels, and inspirations. So he gives us the commandments to tell us what to do, and he gives us the counsels to help us, you know, do all that. And then he gives us the inspirations to do the right things, because we can't do all the counsels. The counsels are related to different lifestyles and that sort of stuff. But then he says the highest form of love of God is to love him no matter what. So to love suffering and affliction when we receive it, because we know it comes from God who loves us. And that's one of the ways he guides us in our spiritual path, one of the ways he helps us atone for, you know, our past sins and all, because he says, you know, take up your cross every day and follow me. And so those are some of the crosses that he gives us. They come in all shapes, sizes, and varieties and stuff. So those are the three things that he wants us to kind of focus on. And
so if you say that we have afflictions for past sins, I mean, some people would argue that, does that mean people that have serious illnesses are trying to recover from something big that they did in their life?
No, it is not necessarily. It can be because of past sins. It could be a way of atoning, you know, doing our purgatory here instead of later, kind of a thing. It's not necessarily. Hi there.
Okay, I just have to go up another line.
Okay.
I'll be out of your way.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay. But a lot of times, we just have suffering. It's taking up our cross every day and following God. And we have those crosses for a number of different reasons. You know, sometimes it is to help us atone for things we've done in the past. But also, it's for the conversion of other people. Yeah.
You know, because you read a lot of things that people write, like, how can a God do that? And yeah. I don't believe in a God because God wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like Sandy Hook and all these other tragedies.
Yeah.
But they haven't been taught redemptive suffering. I think only Catholics are.
Yeah.
And it's so, that's the main reason people don't love God, is because of suffering.
And things happen. God doesn't sit there and say, today I'm going to cause this accident, or tomorrow I'm going to give somebody this.
But
things
He allows it.
His permissive will.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He doesn't cause it.
And so they don't get it.
So we got a couple of different kinds of suffering. We got the kind with, as a result of our own stupidity. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're just doing something really stupid and we get hurt.
That's on us.
That's on us. That's not coming from God, right? But then we have suffering that that God sends to us, and it's atonement for things we might have done in the past. But we've got to remember that every time God sends us a suffering, he also sends the grace to deal with that suffering.
Yes.
He never just sends you a suffering without the grace. That's why he calls it a yoke.
Hmm.
Okay? He calls it a yoke because it's made for two. So when he sends you a suffering, you're on one side of the yoke. He's on the other side of the yoke. He's giving you the grace and his own help to deal with that suffering. And sometimes the sufferings are really tough. You know, you get some really bad news sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or something really bad happens to somebody. You know? A good friend of ours, his 15-year-old son was doing construction work in the summertime. Good kid. Falls off a scaffold, hits his head on a rock, and kills him.
Mm.
You know? I mean, those kind of things are really tough because they just hit you like a ton of bricks. They just come on. You know, there's no preparation for it or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
When my son died 2 years ago, We knew he had cancer. He was doing his hospice at our house. Mm-hmm. So we had a chance to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And we talked back and forth a lot, you know, and he told us how he felt about the whole thing and all this kind of stuff, you know. So there was a lot of preparation for the event. Mm. But when it comes, hits you like a ton of bricks, you know, you cross the street and a car hits you or hits a friend or something like that. Those things are really tough to deal with. Mm. Because you're not prepared for it.
No.
You know, it just comes on you very suddenly. And the thing you have to just deal with it, know that, you know, we are never going to understand God's mind on everything he does.
Mm. Until we're up there.
Until we're up in heaven. There's always a reason for whatever he does, right? He doesn't have to explain himself to us. But out of love for him, we have to accept it and say, okay, well, I don't understand this. You know, there's no way in the world I'm ever going to understand this while I'm here.
No.
But I accept it because I know it came from you.
Yeah.
And I know you love us. And all you can do is love us because you are love. And so I accept it on those grounds. Even though I don't like it and I can't understand it, I still accept it. And suffering has a lot to do with those kind of things. Mm. Sufferings and afflictions, we accept them because we love God and we know he loves us infinitely. And it's a hill you have to get over to get to the other side where you can accept that. Because going up that hill is really tough. Yeah. That couple I was telling you about that lost their 15-year-old, I mean, we had a lot of sessions with that couple, my wife and I. And it took a lot to help them get through that tragedy.
Because I think it's so hard to accept that God loves you.
Oh, yeah. It's really hard, you know? And especially when you think of a parent, you know, that you've invested 15 years in the development of this child, a good kid, you've done a great job, and all of a sudden something like that happens, you know?
Yeah.
That's tough to deal with.
It's hard
really
to
tough.
Accept and understand.
I think it's a lot, you know, like in the will. You will things. You can will the way your mind thinks, you know?
Yeah.
Because of our background.
Exactly.
And
right. Exactly.
Well, love is an act of the will.
Yeah.
It's not
will.
An emotion,
it's
you
will.
Know?
Because I know when John died, I said I was 50%, of course, I love my husband dearly, but I was 50% joyous also. 50%
for him.
Sad and 50% happy.
Because he wasn't suffering anymore.
He wasn't suffering, and it was God's will he was going to die.
Yeah.
And why go crazy over that when you knew it was going to happen anyway?
He's deliriously happy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Not.
Right, and he's already peaceful.
But you also have the hope that you'll see him again.
Exactly. Again. So it's like if the will tells you. You know, right. I don't want to say it's mind games, but it's your faith that really controls the way you think.
And, and everybody comes from it a different way. Like
right.
My sister is not... doesn't believe in the faith, even though, you know, we're all
like so family. Many around us.
And she's a retired doctor, and my father had lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she told him, you have to have this surgery or you're going to die a painful death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right when COVID started.
Yeah,
and
right.
We did a scan, and when the doctor did the surgery, the tumor was like way bigger than what they thought, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then my father ended up on a ventilator, and he couldn't get off it because there was no ventilators free.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyways, so she moved mountains to get him home. But she really said, like, she goes, why did he go through all this? You know, I gave him this advice. And, you know, my stepmother attacked her, saying, why did you tell him to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said stuff like, you know, this is probably God's plan, you know, for him to come back to the faith. And we had all times to see him and all that.
Yeah.
But she says, nobody wants to be on a ventilator and lay there for months. And I'm like...
Yeah, that's true. Nobody wants to.
Which, nobody wants to suffer. Nobody wants to have cancer.
You don't have a chance. Nobody wants to have cancer either.
I don't know. I said he didn't have any pain, and he got to see people in a priest's home. My father was away from it for...
Really?
Yeah.
It was a blessing.
Well, we don't, you know, I don't know. She just doesn't take it that way at all.
Yeah.
She just thinks it was pure misery.
Yeah.
It's faith that makes you think like that. It's faith.
I just think it was.
Yeah, there are a lot of people like that.
I saw God's hand the whole way.
You see that?
But you just wonder why she can't grasp that when you're praying so hard for her. It just takes so long.
Well, the whole world is full of suffering, you know? Like that little priest that was here for a while who found out he was becoming a bishop in Africa.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a thing in a bulletin about him.
Yeah.
You know, right where he is, they're having these wars and they come in and chop people up
in
with machetes and everything, you know?
Yeah.
Bob?
That's Bishop Nare.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's got this horrible situation right around him.
How can you do
and,
that?
But he still has to have that faith to try to deal with it the best way he can. Mm. And it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
He knows
you know?
Any day he can be.
Yeah, he could be the next one. That,
you know,
he could be a martyr.
Yeah.
And, I see God trying to work on my sister, even though she doesn't. She had a dream that my father was standing there and he was young. And she goes, "Dad, is it you?" And he said, "Who else would it be?"
Yeah.
And she said, "He looked great and he was young."
Yeah. Oh, that should have helped.
Yeah. I'm like, God's trying on her.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, dealing with suffering is one of the hardest things. And it's the thing that really challenges our love for God.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's you really have to go through a lot of thinking. A lot of acceptance for that to happen. And that's why, you know, Jesus says, take up your cross every day. Take up your cross daily and follow me. He doesn't say, take it up today and I'll give you a break for the next 2 years, you know. He says, take up your cross daily and follow me. And the sufferings come in all shapes and sizes.
I got to tell you something funny. Talk about, you know, and I always say God's in the ordinary. Everything that happens, you know. So, well, I had this blank. I'm getting my... Susan's coming with all the seventh, so I'm getting out blankets, and they've been in the closet a while. So I was washing some of them, and I took out one, it was very thin, put it in the washing machine, and I went to get it, and it was a crazy material. It had broken up like cotton candy, and then I saw this mesh covering, like that the cotton candy was in the mesh. And I looked in the machine, I said, I'll never get this out. I'm digging, and it's like cotton candy coming up. I never saw
what kind of fabric was that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I used the blanket.
Oh,
yeah, the whole thing. I mean, it was like, there was thousands of pieces of this cotton candy.
Killed the washing machine.
And I thought, that's a funny cross today, Lord. Yeah. I mean, I'm just digging in the... I said,
well, the
I
lesson
that
is,
up.
Don't wash that kind of blanket.
Yeah, it's a good thing you were, it's good thing you were wearing it. Not great.
I couldn't believe it. And it didn't look dirty, but I knew it was old.
Yeah.
See, it probably was never used.
Yeah.
But a weird material, whatever.
Yeah. So,
China.
So then Francis talks about Job. You've all read the story of Job,
he's
you know.
My favorite.
Job is his whole family's gone, and God gives him a whole new family. And I think, well, what about that old family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they went to heaven, hopefully.
But
it all worked out.
So, he says, good things are willingly accepted by all men.
Yeah.
But to accept evil belongs only to perfect love.
Yeah.
And that's a sentence that you should underline and, you know, make note of.
Have any of you seen that movie that's out right now, I Heard the Bells?
No.
It's the life of Henry, not the life, it's a short period of his life. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Oh, really?
During the Civil War.
Oh.
And the Christmas Carol he wrote, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. But it's all about this. It's accepting the bad things that happen in your life, and it's redemptive suffering, and it's believing
that. What channel is it on?
It's not a channel.
It's
at the movie theater.
Oh, it's a movie at the theater.
Sight and Sound. It's at Gainesville. I took my daughter.
Oh, really?
One of my daughters. Yeah, right now it is.
Uh-huh.
But it's I Heard the Bells, and it's beautiful.
Really?
But it's this is the
story.
Yeah. Sure.
And Longfellow had something funny about the Civil War.
Yeah.
What was it?
Bob and I went and saw that movie last night. It's made by Sight and Sound Theater. It's in Lancaster.
Yeah. Lancaster, okay.
That's who produced the movie.
And it was their first movie.
It was their very first movie.
Oh, wow.
Normally they do the live plays.
They've been doing it.
I just saw their date.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's only going to be there for a very short time. So if anybody is interested, it's in Gainesville at the Regal Cinema.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Sounds great.
When the movie was over, everyone in the theater applauded.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow.
What's the name of it?
I heard the bells.
I heard the bells.
It's the story of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow,
who wrote
that hymn, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day.
Yeah. That sounds great. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it's a Christian movie.
Yeah, good. I have to tell Maribel about it. See if we can go.
They talked about it.
That sounds good.
Did they?
Well, thank you.
It's in the Civil War
era.
Right.
Basically, foreground.
Okay. Good.
Last year, it was the first time.
So then he talks about how do you respond to these things that happen to you. You know, do you do it cheerfully, quickly, confidently, whatever? And he says, but if love takes its path straight through God's will, amid afflictions, it walks on with assurance. Since affliction is in no way lovable in itself, it is a very easy thing to love it solely in reference to the hand that gives it. Mm. And that's the real basic message he's trying to say all through here. Mm. Says, since affliction is in no way lovable in itself, it is a very easy thing to love it solely in reference to the hand that gives it. If it comes from God, you say, thank you. Mm. No matter how hard it is.
I don't like it, but thank you.
I don't like it.
I think it's especially hard in mental illness.
And the thing to remember is that it there's nothing wrong with asking God to give you relief from suffering. There's nothing wrong with that. Jesus did that in the Garden of Gethsemane. Mm-hmm. He said, let this cup pass from me, but not my will, but yours be done. Mm-hmm. So when suffering does come, ask for relief. You know, go to the doctor or get medicine if it's a sickness of some kind. Don't think you have to just put up with it, you know, and suffer through it. But at the same time, if God wants you to deal with this, he's going to give you the grace to deal with it. Mm. And that's something to always remember, too. You're not just doing this on your own. He sends you a yoke, not a harness. Okay? And that's the thing to remember.
Yeah.
Yoke.
Yeah. Okay? Because that yoke has the other part, other place for the other creature. You know, we always got two oxen and a yoke. And he's the other one. I'm not saying he's an ox. I'm saying that he's there helping us because it's his yoke that he's giving us.
Yeah.
That means it was when you get a yoke for somebody, you go to the store, you buy the yoke, you come back, and you start fitting it to your animal. Right. Mm. So you're shaping it to fit the exact configuration of your animal so that it's comfortable for them to pull it. So he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's light because he's pulling at least half of it. You know? Even when he carried his cross, he got Simon of Cyrene to help him carry his cross. So he had a yoke there.
Like footsteps in the sand.
Yeah.
Carried.
That's right. So he's always there in the midst of our suffering. And that's why we don't just go out and choose our own suffering. We don't say, gee, I feel like suffering today. I'm gonna go flog myself or something. You know, you don't do that. If God wants you to suffer, he's going to send you some kind of suffering.
He'll get you.
And then you deal with it, and you accept it as a yoke. And you realize who's on the other side helping you with it, you know? And that's something that a lot of people never think of. They don't understand that. A lot of our non-Catholic friends don't understand that, you know? And it's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because...
Well, even our Catholic friends, some of them...
A lot of our Catholic, that's true, too. Yeah.
It's so sad.
And so the next section on page 79 begins, resign yourself to God's will in suffering. So again, he's kind of hitting the same theme again. When you have something, resign yourself to God's will, and just recognize, you know, where it's coming from. He says, love of the cross makes us undertake voluntary afflictions such as fasting, and makes us renounce pleasures, honors, and riches.
You know, I just read these exact words. It's really amazing how, you know, there's always connected dots.
Yeah.
Like in Divine Intimacy by Father Gabriel, the Carmelite.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good book.
They have a chart with three roads going to heaven. The left, he wrote, was all the worldly pleasures, honors, and riches. And they stop. They don't go all the way. Mm-hmm. And then the one on the right was the satisfactions in prayer and all that stuff, that we can't even cling to anything, consolations in prayer. Mm-hmm. And the middle was the very narrow, and that was the one that went all the way up. And on the top, it was the where you live in the honor and glory of God, and you live in love. And that was the only one that went mm-hmm. up. And, you know, I've looked at that chart for ages. I have to admit it. This was the first time I read every word, mm-hmm. and I looked at everything. I thought, it was exactly.
Yeah. Who's the father that writes that?
Father Gabriel. Divine yeah. Intimacy. That's amazing,
yeah.
that book.
What chapter is that in?
This was the first batch. It goes according to the liturgical year.
Right.
And it was right in the first Advent.
Okay.
So it was like maybe, well, there's a dot. It's in the beginning before you get to the first chapter. Okay. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. It's like give up everything. And the middle road was nada. Cling to nothing.
Yeah.
Mm. Everything for the honor and glory of God. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Yeah.
Which,
we're not
and I'm thinking, what do I still cling to? Yeah. You know, I still cling to a few things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like people's, you like people's. Certain people you like so much, but we, you know, you can't get too attached
yeah.
to anything. Mm-hmm. So you have to detach.
Yeah.
yeah.
So now he's talking it's about something here yeah. that kind of goes along with this.
Right.
He says, the love of the cross makes us undertake voluntary afflictions, such as fasting, and makes us renounce certain pleasures, honors, and riches. Those are the things that, you know, in the gospel, Jesus was talking to one of the apostles about something that was going on. I don't remember exactly what now. But he said, for these kinds of things, only prayer and fasting can get rid of it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what he's talking about here. So fasting is something we voluntarily do. It's not something that hurts us. In fact, they say if you have an illness or something, don't fast because you need the food for your health. But sometimes we do fasting just as a mortification of ourselves. It's renouncing a certain kind of pleasure that we take in a certain kinds of food. But he says renounce pleasures, honors, and riches. We do that voluntarily, and he calls it an affliction, but it's really a mortification mm-hmm. that we do voluntarily. Because the gospel calls us to do those kinds of things. He says prayer and fasting are the two things. The Blessed Mother calls us all the time to do prayer and fasting. Medjugorje, she says fast on bread and water every Wednesday and Friday. Mm. If your health allows, if you can. Mm. You know. Now, I did go there, and the bread they have there is
so
very nutritious.
It's
not like this stuff out here that the rats would starve on, you know, if they ate it every day for their meals. So that was good. And the wine they have is excellent. Almost everybody has their little mix their own wine at home.
Wow.
You know, I got a couple of bottles. It was $2 a bottle, you know. I got a couple of bottles. It's really good. But it says, the love found in such exercises is completely agreeable to the beloved. So God loves it when we do things like fasting. And sometimes just taking an extra hour or an extra 5 minutes of prayer, you know, mm-hmm. rather than do something else. Mm-hmm. Just give that mental attention to God. He loves that. Mm-hmm. It says it's completely agreeable to the beloved. It's still more so when we patiently, gently, and contently accept whatever pains, torments, and tribulations in consideration of God's will, which sends them to us. So every time we're dealing with something like this, you know, we recognize that it's God's will, and we deal with it. Love reaches its most exalted state when we accept afflictions not only easily and patiently, but even cherish, like, and embrace them because of that divine good pleasure from which they come. And we can only do that when we have this affliction and we recognize where it comes from and that it's an act of love. And we say, okay, I'll accept this. I don't like it, but I'm going to accept it as an act of love because it's for my spiritual good or somebody else's spiritual good. Remember what Christina Gallagher said, you know, that every time somebody converts, it's because somebody suffered for them. And so that's something to to keep in mind there too, that when God sends you a suffering, maybe he's got somebody in mind who's on the verge of converting and needs this grace from your suffering to share with them for their conversion. We don't understand how all that works, but God does. And that's all we got to worry about. He says, accept it. We accept it. Then he uses it. And somebody else gets a chance to go to heaven.
Is it correct sometimes to offer up your suffering for a special intention? Like
sure.
A person, yes.
Yeah, sure. It says like offering up a rosary.
Yeah, you're right.
As an indulgence for somebody, you know?
Yeah, so. You offer suffering. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. If you look at the morning offering, you say, I offer you the merits of every joy, sorrow, suffering, good work I do this day. And I ask you for every indulgence to which I am entitled. And I offer these merits and indulgences to you, for you to dispense in accordance with your holy will. So yes, God, to take whatever things you're doing good and use it for somebody else to help them. I mean, how many people have kids who have left the church or relatives who have left the church? So you pray. And when you have an affliction, you offer that up for their conversion, come back. There's a special prayer to St. Joseph, asking him to get your lost ones back, you know? So. He says, among all the efforts of perfect love, that effort made by acquiescence of spirit in spiritual tribulations is undoubtedly the purest and noblest. And then he goes, has a story about a blessed Angelo of Foligno. I never heard of this person.
No,
but,
I didn't.
But anyways, says gives an admirable example, description of the interior pains she sometimes experienced. Her soul, she says, was tortured like a man who was bound hand and foot and hung by his neck, and although not strangled, remains in this state between life and death without any hope of relief. Unable to stand on his feet or to help himself with his hands, unable to cry out or even to sigh or groan.
And I wonder what she means, her soul was tortured.
I don't know. We'd have to read about her life to find out what he's referring to there.
That makes me think of, like, I heard Mother Teresa had that dark night
for 40 years. Yeah. I always think of her.
I think of her. And I think, gosh, she didn't lose her faith.
Yeah, which John the Cross talks about that. He's got a whole book on it, The Dark Night of the Soul. You know, talks about that very extensively. But it's, and Mother Teresa had the same thing for a long time.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
And it's just, you feel like you don't have any consolations at all. Mm. Like God is not even there, he's separated. But you know he is. Mm. In fact, the saints tell us that when you're going through this dark night, they call it, God is closer to you then than at any other time, because he's the one walking you through. It's like you're spiritually blind. You have no consolation whatsoever, and you don't feel anything, you don't see anything. So God holds you by the hand and is walking you through this darkness to get to the other side. And sometimes it's only lasts an hour, sometimes a week, sometimes a year, sometimes 15 years or more.
I wonder why Mother Teresa, do you think she was so high up in the spiritual world?
Because she did everything for love of God.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything.
Yeah. And she said once that she was taking care of people that had no faith, and she wanted to experience that destitute feeling.
Oh.
Yeah. And she also would pick them up and bring them back to her place.
Right.
And they were dying. People were dying. And she would bathe them and feed them and all that kind of stuff, put them on a clean bed. And somebody said, well, why are you doing this? They're about to die. She said, I want them to know before they die that at least one person loved them.
Exactly.
You know? And that was her motivation, to let them know that at least one person loved them. Doesn't mean she was in love with them, because she didn't even know them, you know?
Right.
But she loved them because God loved them.
Right. She was a child.
And that's the only way we learn about God's love is through other people. Yeah. So
that's right.
She wanted them to feel his love.
And somebody said, well, why do you do this for these people? She said, I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it to Jesus. Because he said, whatever you do to one of these, you do to me.
But it must be such a test of trust.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to continue doing that for so many years without any emotional consolation or feeling toward God, even.
Normal depression would probably set into a lot of people without faith.
Exactly.
She must have had such a level of faith.
She's
probably saving all these souls because she went through that for so long.
That's right.
And Therese, 18 months before she died, could not see God.
Yeah, that's a frequent thing.
Yeah.
And she had faith. She said there's a sun behind all those clouds. You know, I mean,
but why would God do that except to test our trust or our faith?
I don't think he's I don't think it's necessarily testing it. I think it's helping us confirm it. You know, because I can say I trust God, but
in that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, what you're saying, secondly.
Yeah.
Because you wonder why God would. You already love Him so much.
But I think I read someplace that God, I can't explain it right. God has a certain spot where we should reach. Like he has a potential for every person, and we either reach that potential here or when we die, and she reached
that's
that
one way
on earth.
She was
through
so
that
far.
Suffering.
Yeah.
That's
right.
What I'm going to say.
Yeah.
She did it here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. God's got a plan for all of our lives, and part of our job is to try to figure out what that plan is. You know, it's not always easy to see. You got to put a lot of thought into it. Part of it is looking at, you know, what are the gifts they gave you? Mm. Every one of us has a set of gifts that God gave us. I don't care who you are. Mm. The garbage man picking up your trash has got a gift of some kind that God gave him. So it's a question of finding out, you know, trying to figure out what that is, and then how can you use it? What way can you use it to better?
Charism,
yeah. How can you?
And I think sometimes it's the things we like to do. You know, God's tied into the human person.
Sometimes that's true.
You know, sometimes it's natural to do the things people do. Right?
Sometimes He'll give somebody the gift of a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
Right. And so so they make a living singing, but He also wants you to use it for Him, for His glory too. So you join a choir. Yeah. You don't just keep it all to yourself, which a lot of them do, apparently. And then He says, "The situation is this, Theotimus. At times, the soul is so weighed down by interior afflictions that all his faculties and powers are oppressed by privation of whatever can give it joy and by apprehension and experience of all that can sadden it. Hence, in imitation of the Savior, the soul begins to be greatly troubled, to fear, to suffer dread, and finally to feel sad with a sadness like that of the dying. We can then... Well can the soul say, my soul is sad even unto death." So that's exactly what Christ went through. You know, you look at the suffering in the agony in the garden. He suffered so much that He actually bled blood.
Right.
You know, there was a book written by a doctor on the different afflictions that Christ went through during His passion. And he described what has to happen to you internally for you to actually bleed blood. For that to actually come through your skin like that. And it's an affliction that's really horrible. And I read somewhere, and I forget where now, but that the biggest agony God suffered in the garden was knowing what He was going to go through and then seeing all the souls who would reject what He was doing for them and saying, "I'd rather go to hell instead." And say He saw all the souls for all time that were going to say no to His offer, to His suffering.
What more can I do?
Yeah, like there's nothing more I could do, you know.
Yeah.
And these people are saying, "Well, I don't care about that. I'd rather go to hell." You know, it's really sad to think that people actually think that way.
We're living in a very sad world.
Yeah, but it's very sad.
This is a little off topic.
Yeah.
But it just seems like evil is really not afraid to show itself now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
And that whole campaign don't know, it's a Spanish name for the clothing that they're using those kids.
Oh, yeah.
On the one website, Catholic website, they showed the woman that is, like, I don't know, design person for it, and on her own personal Instagram pages, she's dressed in red and holding red babies.
Ooh.
And it's just like
it's hideous.
Yeah.
The one guy showed on YouTube, the what is this? Taylor Marshall.
Yeah, right.
And it's like hideous stuff. And she puts it on her Instagram in full, like, I'm okay with this.
Well, the evil is in full swing right now. Yeah, it's all over the place.
But I think it's our, we could give up and quit persevering when we see all this evil.
It was just
we
so
can,
shocking.
Sure.
Right.
Like, yeah. Which is exactly what Satan wants you to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's his goal.
Feel it.
She was like all red, and she had babies all, they're like implements. Devil babies. Disgusting. And everything she did was evil against some company.
Right.
I was like, wow. It's just in your face.
Sure.
On the news last night, they showed a certain neighborhood in Virginia where people had written slurs against different nationalities on buildings and on sidewalks. You see the Arlington or Annandale? And the neighborhood was so enraged that they went out the next day and they said kids were chalking over the words and drawing flower boxes. And a lot of the neighbors had... they were cleaning the sidewalks.
So they
and they said it's rejuvenated the neighborhood. They want to spread love. And they had signs. Hmm. They said, this, Loudoun County, if you see it was last night. They said, this is not the area that we want people to believe. Mm-hmm. Well, and they want to get the people who did this all over the buildings and on the streets against a lot of blacks.
You know, I just think God is bringing this evil, is letting this evil come out in the open, you know, so we can fight it or...
Yeah.
Good will come out.
Either that or Satan's trying harder than he ever has before because he knows his time is getting short.
Amen.
Oh, I hope
doesn't it say
I
in the Bible?
So.
I hope so.
I forgot.
I hope.
Yeah, but short in God's mind is not same as ours.
Well, Jesus says somewhere that if I don't come sooner than I would have, there won't be any faith left on earth. That's what you're thinking of. So, you know. And we got a lot of people losing faith right now.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people losing faith.
A lot of people didn't come back.
Yeah.
Can't stop praying now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We're all in agreement on that.
That makes you hungry.
And then he talks a little bit about Job and Job's response, and he says, yet love permits itself to lament, at least for the fact that it cannot lament, and to utter all the lamentations of Job and Jeremiah, but on condition that the sacred acquiescence is always made in the depths of the soul, in the supreme and most delicate part of the spirit. Acquiescence, which is, you know, accepting what God sends you. Mm-hmm. Such acquiescence is neither tender nor sweet and hardly perceptible to the senses, although it is true, strong, invincible, and most loving. So when, regardless of what happens to you, you accept it because you know it comes from God and you love God. And you know he's never going to do anything except love you, regardless of what he sent you. And if you can't understand it, that's okay. Mm. One day you will, you know, when you get to heaven.
Some people say it's an evil against you. So how can God give you an evil?
Yeah. It's not evil.
They do.
It's not an evil. If you bring it on yourself, it could be evil. If you accept what Satan's trying to do to you, that could be evil. But if it comes from God, it's not never evil.
Wasn't that in the Old Testament where, like, if you were barren, they used to say that God was punishing you? Like, God doesn't do things like that.
No, he doesn't play tricks on you.
No.
He says, the union and conformity with God's good pleasure is made by holy resignation or by most holy indifference. Resignation is practiced by way of effort and submission. So you don't just have resignation to the will of God just, you know, naturally. It's an act of the will. You have to deliberately resign yourself to God's will and say, okay, if it comes from you, I accept it. I don't understand it. I don't like it, but I accept it. Okay? And as we go through the rest of this chapter, you know, it's going to sound like your whole life is supposed to be nothing but suffering. Yeah. Because that's just the topic he's talking about right now.
Right.
But you got to remember that he was a bishop. So he's living his consecrated life on his own, doing the kind of things he's supposed to do as a bishop, you know, teaching and leading his flock and stuff like this. But if you're married, you're not just thinking about yourself. You got a spouse and children to be concerned about as well. And so you can't go around trying to help your children would be miserable all the time. You know, I mean, there's a balance there. You have to work as you're trying to lead your family toward God and teach them some of these things without saying, you got to just live this miserable life all the time, otherwise you don't love God, you know? Because that's not how it works. So there's a period of learning that takes place, and for several years, you're the teacher, because you got kids growing up, and you got to try to teach them this, or you have relatives,
Your siblings,
or nieces and nephews and stuff, and you want them to learn what that balance is. That yeah, you should be happy. You want to be happy. Things are good when you're happy, but sometimes things are going to happen to you. You know, you're on the high school football team, and you got a good chance to get a scholarship to college. And you break your leg, and you don't get the scholarship. You know, bad things happen. All kinds of bad things happen. Like this young boy who was just canonized.
Oh, yeah.
Carlo.
What's his name again?
Carlo.
Carlo Acutis.
Acutis.
Yeah.
Was he canonized?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I think so.
Recently, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But he was a young man, you know, he liked to play with computers and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And
all. Oh,
ordinary kid, you know, ordinary guy. Huh. And this happened to him.
Yeah.
And yet he has such a deep faith that he accepted it, and, you know, in the right spirit and all like that. So
Father Mount said that when that kid becomes canonized, that it's going to, that God's going to send graces to all the teenagers around in the world.
Sure. I hope so.
Pray for him for conversion.
I hope so, they can use it, you know.
Yeah.
But the idea of resignation being practiced by way of effort and submission, an act of the will, is an important thing, because that resignation doesn't just happen. You got to, it's an overt act of love on your part when you have resignation to the will of God. He says, we would much prefer to live rather than to die, but since it is God's good pleasure that we die, we acquiesce in it. We're all going to die at some point, okay? We'd like to live longer, maybe see our grandkids. Depends on how the world's going. You might be glad to get out of here.
She died at 98, and she used to say to me, because she was bedridden the last 2 years. She lived with us 25 years. And she'd say, I'm ready. When is he coming? Yeah. Ellen, oh, no, God, I don't know, Mama. You know, when she
like
was ready.
Ellen says it all the time.
Mary and Phillips used to say that.
My father-in-law did that, too. Yeah. He had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, wow.
And he came to do his hospice with us, you know.
Mm.
And it was tough. It was very, very painful. And none of the meds were working. And he was a person who never had an exterior spiritual life. But the only time we ever saw him do anything was when he'd say grace before meals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He never went to church.
Mm.
He wasn't Catholic. He was different things at different points. But apparently he had a very deep spiritual life that nobody ever saw.
Mm. Wow.
Which was really... And so when he came to live with us, Mary Beth spent most of her time with him.
Mm-hmm.
She was teaching first grade at the school in Stafford, at the Catholic school in Stafford. So she quit because she had to be with him 24 hours a day, you know. And because his meds weren't working or anything else, and she was helping him do all kind of things. But she saw a whole side of him she had never seen before. You know, because when he had these pain episodes that were just excruciating, he would just break out into spontaneous prayer as a way of dealing with the pain. You know? And then he would have these conversations with God. He'd say, okay, it's like God was telling him all the people that he had to forgive that did things. You know, he said, okay, I forgave so-and-so. I forgave so-and-so. And he's talking out loud, right, to God.
Wow.
And Mary Beth sitting there listened to all this.
Amazing. Mm.
And he said, you know, I forgave so-and-so. I forgave so-and-so. I goes, why am I still here?
Yeah.
You know, just like what you were just saying, you know.
Wow.
And then one day, one evening, he was sitting there, and he turned to Mary Beth. He said, who's that woman over there?
Oh.
I think I told you about that before.
No.
He said, who's that woman over there? And she said, what woman is she? Is she nice? Is she ugly or whatever? He said, no, she's beautiful.
Oh.
And she's got a little boy with her.
Oh.
You know? And so,
it's coming soon.
So Mary Beth didn't say anything, you know. So she and I went upstairs, and we pray to the Blessed mm-hmm. Mother to come take her son home, you know. The next morning he died.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know.
I've gone to the Afakia rehab and the oh. different places, and for years I was seeing this one lady there, and then she said, I see my father standing there.
Uh-huh.
And she said that to me, and I go, would you like the priest to come in and visit you? And she goes, yes.
Yeah.
And she died within a month, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of things that we you know, when somebody's going through that period, you really don't really know what's going
in
on,
their
you know,
because
they're like one foot here, one foot there, you know.
Yeah.
It's a strange transition.
That must have given your wife comfort, though. I mean,
oh, it did. She saw a whole side of him she never knew existed.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
And she felt so good about that, you know, because she was really worried about him because he never went to church, you know. He wasn't Catholic. His mother was very anti-Catholic. So, I mean, she was so anti-Catholic, she would not even serve fish on Friday because she was afraid somebody would think she was Catholic. That's how bad off they were, you know.
But that just shows you don't have to be Catholic. I know you don't have to be.
Right.
Right.
You know.
But was when Mary Beth converted, he said he was extremely happy because he was worried about her because she thought she was an atheist when I first met her, you know. And so when she converted and came into the church, he was very, very happy. She had given him this book of memories of your children. It was for a man to write about his children and grandchildren.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was writing down all the things that were on his mind about each of his children. And for her, he said he was worried because she didn't have any faith life.
Oh,
and he was a guy who never went to church, but he was worried about her because she didn't have a faith life. And then he said he was so happy when she converted and came into the church. And then when we took him home to our house for his hospice, he said, boy, this is very, very, very Christian of you. I really appreciate it. Because he was saying he wanted to go to like a home, you know. And Mary Beth said, sure. Yeah, all right. We're going to send you to a home to go die, right? No, I don't think it's going to happen. You know? So
he doesn't really know the Virgin Mary.
No, he didn't know anything about that, you know.
Wow.
And so when he saw this woman, he didn't know really who she was.
Wow.
All he knew was she was beautiful and she had that little boy in her arms.
But what does it tell you about the Blessed Mother?
Oh, she's
she
amazing.
Loves everybody.
She is amazing.
She's not
prejudiced. Well, remember the first convert from Medjugorje was a Muslim.
And where did she appear on the roof? Is it Knock?
Everybody saw her regardless of what religion.
Uh-huh.
It was in Zeitung in Egypt.
Father Beautiful talked about that,
Yeah. So anyway, this resignation is practiced by way of effort and submission. It's something you have to really work at.
Mm.
And then he talks about, on page 82, cultivating a holy indifference to all but God's pleasures. He talks a lot about indifference in this next section. And it sounds kind of like you shouldn't care about anything. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it's saying.
But it's attachment.
But it's attachments.
Yeah.
And when I was reading it, I was thinking of Padre Pio. There was a story about him, about people are always worried about him eating. Because they said, well, what would you like to eat? He says, I don't care. Just bring me food. You know, he was totally indifferent to whatever they put in front of him, he ate and he was happy with it, you know.
Yeah.
And they were always afraid he wasn't eating enough. And, you know, because... You know, a little monk's supposed to have a little belly, right?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have a little belly, so they worried about him. But he had that kind of thing. He was indifferent to anything other than the will of God. You know, so whatever you brought him to eat, he'd eat. He didn't care what it was.
So I don't know if it's not caring. It is like being happy with whatever.
Well, that's true. It was indifferent to whatever it was.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, I'm happy
content.
With it. Yeah, content with whatever you sent me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a better way to express it. Thank you. But he's talking about cultivating a holy indifference to all but God's good pleasure. And he begins to talk again about resignation. He says, resignation prefers God's will above all things. Yet it does not cease to love many other things in addition to God's will. Holy indifference goes beyond resignation. for it loves nothing except for love of God's will, so that nothing touches the indifferent heart in the presence of God's will. And so when you know what God's will is, you don't care about anything else. Mm. Nothing's going to touch your heart but what God's will is, if you understand what that will is. Whereas the resignation says, I can accept God's will in this, but I still like some other things. Mm. I can accept God's will that I'm suffering from something today, but I still want that cookie over there, you know, because I like cookies. Mm. And so, but with indifference, you just know what God's will is, and that's the only thing you really care about.
Mm. You know, I had a funny experience. It's so minute, it's nonsensical, but I'll tell you anyway, because I'm not really crazy. But I had.
Are you sure?
Sometimes I wonder. But I did miraculously find a handyman. You know, he was at my daughter's house, and she said, I think he'll come to Warrington. Miracle, he came to Warrington. Lovely man, Guzman. He came, and he couldn't do enough. You know, he was like, did little doorknobs, mm-hmm. toilet seats. He says, you got more? He says, I'm coming back. You're going to clean out my garage and my shed. Everything goes. I'm so happy
Can
he's
we
coming
all have
back.
His number?
So he had a little helper, and the little girl was beautiful. She's about 14, I think. Okay. So I said, can you just take out this around the kitchen sink, the silicone? It was getting black or something. I said, take it out and put new stuff in. So she's out there doing it. She painted the kitchen window. Perfect. So I looked the next day. And I looked, and I'm looking at the granite countertop to the left, because I'm crazy over certain things, you know? Just, like, I don't like to see things. I cover them up if they're not right. So anyway, I'm looking at the thing, and I said, what is this? It's like something all on the granite. I feel that it's, like, sticky. I says, you can see it, because it's right under the window. If it was in the corner, I wouldn't see it. I don't care. I put something on top of it. So, was coming off slowly. I said, this is crazy. Why am I getting crazy over a stupid little thing? You know? So then I put a hot plate on top of it. And I looked this morning, it wasn't so bad, but I said, you see? That was crazy.
It means
nothing in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of life that right. there's this thing. Mm-hmm. Right?
But you didn't have holy indifference.
Yeah, exactly.
And I pointed it out to you.
Oh, I said, and it was so crazy, I'll never forget it. You know, it was like crazy.
So he says, it is true that even the most indifferent heart in the world can be touched by some affection as long as it does not yet know where God's will lies. And so even if you have an indifferent heart and all you care about is God's will, until you know what God's will is, you might still have an affection for something that's not part of God's will, because you don't know what God's will is yet. And so don't get upset if that happens. It's going to happen. Mm. You know? Very few people know God's will perfectly. And so you try to figure out what his will is. You do the best you can. And then whatever you think you know what God's will is, that's what you focus on.
You can't make a general blanket statement in your mind and say, the things that happen all day, you know, things that you didn't have control over, or things... that's God's will. Like, you know, everything that happens, he allows. So, like, if you go through the day and things, good things and bad things, it's like all God's will.
Well, I have this book.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good because it's like, it's like spoon-feeding me.
What is it?
But it says stuff like, you know, everything is God's will. And did Mary have a moment where she wasn't doing God's will?
No.
Do we have time where we say, well, I'm just going to do God's will this, but later, this part of the day, I'm just...
Yeah.
So it is always...
It's everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Answer my
so
question.
When
Thank
I read
you.
That, I go, oh, okay.
What's the name
what
of the book?
What book is that?
A Nun. I was telling Jim that a Nun...
Into Your Hands, Father.
Yeah, what? Recommended on one of those websites.
Oh, Ignatius. Into Your Hands,
What's the
Father.
Name of it?
Yeah.
Into Your Hands, Father.
Into Your Hands, Father by who?
Wilfred
Simon Simmons Sinnesen, Stinnesen.
And so he does. It does talk about the other books that we read on abandoning the will. It's called Abandoning Ourselves to the God Who Loves Us, and it's pretty much going over.
And
a little a level for me.
Yeah. So then he's got an example here about Eliezer trying to find the bride. So Eliezer goes to Haran's well, and he sees Rebekah, and he found her very fair and lovely and everything else. But it says he remained indifferent to her until he knew by the sign God revealed to him that the divine will had prepared her for his master's son. And so God gives you a sign, and you recognize the sign, and so you respond the way God wants you to. We saw that in the baptism of Jesus, when John the Baptist said he knew it was Jesus because of the sign that he saw that God had told him to look for when he would baptize the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So when God wants you to see something like that, he's going to make sure you know it.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to leave it up to you. He's not going to leave it up to you. So it is time. We're going to stop here and pick up on page 82 when we come back again next time. So keep thinking about it. Anybody have any thoughts on what we covered today?
We said them all.
I think you already said all your thoughts as we went along, which is good. That's the whole purpose of this thing. It's a discussion, not a lecture.
Daddy Taggart said to say hi.
Okay, thank you.
What would you say are signs from God? Can it be little tiny things, big things, anything?
Could be any size. Huh. Well, what is the story in the Old Testament about the prophet that went up on the mountain and God was going to come by and a big wind came by and everything else. Yeah. And finally, just a slight breeze, the still small voice of God he heard.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? You have to be open to hearing it.
Yeah.
You can't let yourself get so distracted by everything else that you don't hear when God's talking to you. You know, so you have to let your mind be in a state where it's open to hearing what God's trying to tell you. So you try to hear with the ears of your soul and see with the eyes of your soul.
You know what? I get loud and clear, like during Lent or stuff like that. I don't watch TV that much, but if I come home and I'm out shopping, I got to put on Fox News 10 minutes just to see what's the latest.
If you missed
it's
anything.
An addiction. And anytime, you know what comes through? Limit that. When you think about silence and solitude, that's the first thing comes. TV.
But you got to watch it when you go Fox News, because the first thing you get is Michael Lindell's commercials for the sheets.
I can't stand that man anymore. Oh my gosh, he's on all the time.
The pillow guy.
He does sheets and slippers. I can't.
And he has long commercials. It lasts like 5 minutes.
I have three: Medicare, My Pillow, and the Nexium sleep med.
Don't forget the vitamins.
All your fruits and veggies.
Fruits and vegetables.
I want to see how they get those